It was Drug War Day on Tuesday at the Shadow Conventions, which are being held in the Patriotic Hall on 18th and Figueroa Streets here in Los Angeles, California, and running concurrently with the Democratic National Convention being held at the Staples Center just a few blocks away. On Monday night, a confrontation between police and attendees at a Rage Against the Machine concert happened, in which police fired tear gas, pepper spray, and rubber bullets at the protesters. We managed to speak to an eyewitness to find out what happened at the police confrontation with the protesters at the Rage Against the Machine concert, which was held right across from the Staples Center and was watched by delegates and attendees to the Democratic National Convention. And you are?
My name's Dave Saldana. I'm with the National Lawyers Guild, USC Law School chapter.
Dave, you were talking just a minute ago about what happened when the police were coming after some of the demonstrators. Was this at the Rage Against the Machine concert?
It was after they had shut down the show. What they did is they circled the demonstration area and they ran horses through the crowd to force people out onto Olympic Boulevard. And then from there, they had a pincer maneuver, closing people along Olympic, and the cops set up a phalanx on Olympic, and what they would do is they'd open fire with rubber bullets and stun grenades on the demonstrators, and that would cause a panic, and the demonstrators would run, and the police would run their phalanx up behind the demonstrators until it stopped again, and then they would do the same thing over again. At one point, after they had done this a couple of times, several people from the Lawyers Guild were we set up a human shield, and we were walking with our hands up over our heads in a surrender posture, walking backwards facing the police, complying with all of their orders to get away. And at one point they had us trapped under an overpass where the 110 freeway goes over Olympic Boulevard, so we had no escape route at all, and they opened fire on us, and I and several other people were shot in the back by police as we tried to run to get away.
What was there any rationale that's been given by the police department for the action they took?
Not that I know of. I know that the National Lawyers Guild is contemplating several, as many as dozens or more, lawsuits against the police for their actions last night, which in the instance where I got shot was totally unjustified, unprovoked. We were in a very submissive position. We were complying with all of their orders. And nevertheless, they fired on unarmed people in a non-confrontational situation.
Did this action by the police coincide with the delegates getting ready to leave the Staples Center?
As a matter of fact, I don't know if it's coincidence or strategic, but as the crowd was dispersed, the delegates were coming out.
Let me ask you one more question. The police here in L.A. throughout the city seem to be in just a very, very aggressive posture regarding everything that's going on down here. Can I get your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in L.A., and the LAPD was never a force to mess with at all. And they'll turn on you like a snake without a moment's notice. And here, I mean, as we've seen, they really don't need a whole lot of provocation. I mean, I was shot twice yesterday. I was run down by horses as I was trying to get people away from the horses. Some of the demonstrators were trying to provoke, and they were taunting the horses, taunting the police on horseback. And I was grabbing them and pulling them away from the police when I had three mounted police officers charge their horses at me and actually run me down.
Dave Saldana, legal observer with the National Lawyers Guild, Midnight Special Law Collective, thank you. Very often, and especially in the movie capital that Los Angeles is, celebrities and movie stars come out to support causes that they believe in. We were able to speak with director and movie star Tim Robbins after his speech at the Shadow Conventions condemning the failed war on drugs. Talk about why you're involved in the Shadow Conventions here, and in particular on the day when they're dealing with the drug war.
Well, I was invited on this particular day. I'd come on any other day that they invited me. This is a really important venue. This is where democracy is right now in Los Angeles. This is where people are getting together and discussing things, not just mouthpiecing corporate logos and sponsorship. This is, you know, what's happened last night, what's going to happen the next few days in the Staples Center, and what happened in Philadelphia is basically a big, you know, yank off. Everyone knows who's getting nominated. There's no issues being discussed. They're all just beating their own drums. It's a big, long advertisement for the campaign, and expensive, too. Big waste of money. And so I'm here because this is a place where people are actually discussing about issues that matter, that are important to us. We really do need to talk about this drug war, this failure that is winding up with so many people being incarcerated for nonviolent crimes. And when I was in Shawshank Redemption, I talked to a prison guard, a few prison guards, and pretty much all of them, very conservative, salt-of-the-earth kind of Republican types from Ohio, pretty much all of them believed in the legalization of at least marijuana. The reason was because they saw their jails being filled up with these kids coming in there for nonviolent offenses, basically for shorter terms in that state, 3 to 5 years, without any possibility of any kind of GED program or jobs training program in prison, finding themselves basically with idle time in prison. You know what happens with idle time in prison? You become a better criminal. First of all, you have to learn how to defend yourself and survive in that violent world with violent felons. And then, in order to survive, you learn how to be a con man, a fighter, and eventually you have to be ready to kill. And what happens is these kids go out of jail after 3 to 5 years of basically what the guards call crime school. They see how it doesn't work. They see these kids coming back and back. It's not working. There's no reason why these guys should be in prison with violent felons. It's ruining lives. It's costing us millions and millions of dollars. At the very least, we should have two systems of incarceration. One that provides some kind of hope for these kids that are not doing anything violent to anybody.
Let me ask you one more question, and that is, I'd like to get your thoughts on the performance by the police here in Los Angeles during the Democratic convention.
I didn't see it, but I saw on television that the timing was very curious because it happened right after the end of the speech. So it was kind of a nice cut from the convention hall with all the applause to the banging heads outside.
Not just
76 trombones playing under the riot was pretty surreal.
Not just the banging of the heads at the Rage Against the Machine concert, but just in general, the oppressive police force that's patrolling the streets of L.A.
Well, like I say, I haven't met it face to face. If you have, you should talk about it. I do know that I lived here for 9 years, and these cops are among the worst in the world. Unfortunately, where I live right now, New York City has always had tremendous policemen growing up, and unfortunately, there's some people that are kind of ruining what was good policing.
Like, as a public figure and as an artist, I guess?
What I can do is, being able to be here and talk and start discussions and open up dialogue. Is what I can do right now, as far as what people have to do is organize at grassroots level, community organizations, introduce propositions on ballots. Pretty much, reasonable propositions will pass. You just have to get people to the ballots.
We're with Susan Sarandon. Susan Sarandon, why are you involved here at the Shadow Conventions, and in particular today when they're dealing with the issue of the war on drugs?
Well, I really think that. Well, first of all, the whole Shadow Convention and any kind of alternative access to the press, I think, is really important. And I'm very encouraged by the amount of young people that care enough to be involved and to be informed. And specifically today, because, our drug policy is unjust, illogical, a waste of money and time. I mean, it's, with all that we have to worry about to be locking people up for victimless nonviolent crimes is ridiculous, especially at a time when, we're medicating most of our youth on all of these crazy, Prozac and Ritalin and everything. We're just mad to get them on drugs, coffee, Coke, you know, everything. Then, you know, then we incarcerate them for life when they start to smoke marijuana. So I, or whatever. And I just am, think it's a tragedy in terms of what it does to families. It's a tragedy in terms of how it wastes these people's lives. We're not offering them help. And I think it's, you know, a society is judged by how you deal with your prisoners. That's, I forget who said that, but it's been around for years. And I think we have to start looking at a lot of these laws that, that, you know, went into effect as political ploys to get elected, usually. I mean, it's like the death penalty. You know, there's a lot of men that have gotten in office by being tough on something that don't have to then bear the brunt of what that actually means. They're just, it's just a soundbite. And so I'm really happy that I'm here, and they've got a great bunch of speakers, and I hope that it makes a difference.
A number of high-profile politicians also came to the shadow conventions to voice their growing opposition to the failed war on drugs. Among them, Maxine Waters, Representative Charles Rangel, and Representative John Conyers of the Congressional Black Caucus. In addition, a packed house came to hear the speech of the Reverend Jesse Jackson. We attended a press conference held by the Reverend Jackson after his speech.
Is there a concern that the Senate leader?
Your press?
Yes, AP.
I'm Zass.
Is there a concern that the Lieberman is going to be the hardest sell in the African American community?
No. The great challenge for Mr. Lieberman would be the challenge that Kennedy had in 1960. Because he is a breakthrough candidate, and I applaud the breakthrough and the courage of Gore in putting him on the ticket. Just as Kennedy had to go to the South to convince the Southerners that as a Catholic, he could be fair to Southerners and Protestants, and convince, in that case, Jews and Protestants, he could be fair. And he convinced them of that, and he won. Mr. Lieberman has the challenge to convince those who may be anxious about Jewish people. They may be Catholics, they may be Protestants, they may be Southerners, they may be Blacks. He has the challenge to meet with them and convince them of his, that while he's rooted in his faith, on the one hand, he lives under the Constitution. He has the capacity to be fair. I am convinced he can pass the moral test and the constitutional test. He'll be challenged. Indeed, Gore and Lieberman will be challenged on matters of public policy priorities, because you essentially have a DLC ticket that's to the right of the vast body of its convention. This convention is 40% labor. They're not a part of DLC. It's 1,000 African Americans, 1,000 Hispanics and Asian delegates here, is half women. And so in this instance, the DLC leadership and the vast base of the Democratic Party must become synchronized. I'm convinced that's happening. And when it does happen, you're going to begin to see a more energized Democratic Party. I think that Clinton expanded the tent to include more people, more women, more people of color, more physically disabled people. I think Gore raised the roof of the tent by putting Lieberman on the ticket. There had been an historical quota on Jewish people. No matter what their abilities were, they could not get on that national ticket. Gore broke the quota with an affirmative action that was a positive action. And to me, to see the sons and daughters of former slaves and slave masters, the sons and daughters of Holocaust survivors, women fighting for equity and parity, and workers fighting in coalition is a great day. I'm sorry. Who are you writing for?
AP.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
How do you see your role at this convention is perhaps different from other conventions?
Well, I speak to the convention tonight. I spent lots of time with many delegations, labor and rural state delegations, interpreting and connecting delegations or working with the candidates on message so that message connects. And I expect to do through Rainbow Push Coalition, voter registration, voter turnout, and interpret to people what the stakes are. The Supreme Court is at stake. The stakes are high. When Bush and Cheney say leave no one behind, it's really oil slick language. Because if you look at their budget, they say you take $1 trillion surplus and give it back to the top 20% because it belongs to them. There is no room in their budget to include those who are locked out. Again, 10% of America's poor children are in Texas. 1.5 million poor children, 500,000 eligible for the CHIP program, children's health insurance, are in Texas. 600,000 eligible for Medicare are in Texas. They, in fact, are left behind. Bush would not fight for hate crime legislation after Byrd had been lynched in Texas. He went to South Carolina and walked with Jeff Davis and the Confederate flag in South Carolina, and walked with Abe Lincoln and the American flag in Baltimore. I mean, which flag is he waving? We must see that it's not just Bush and Cheney, but it's also Strom Thurmond, and Jesse Hams, and Orrin Hatch, and Tom DeLay, and Dick Archer. People are basically hostile to labor. They're hostile to women's rights, hostile to civil rights. So we, in fact, do have an alternative, and I urge people to make a choice.
Reverend Jackson.
Last one.
What do you say to the people, the thousands of people here in the streets of L.A., and the millions of people across the country who say that there's really no difference for them between Bush and Gore? They're out protesting. They're just, they don't see a difference.
Well, there is a difference. And I support agitation within, but on the outside, and legislation on the inside. After all, we protested in the 60s. Agitation was for public accommodations, but 64, agitation became legislation. We protested in Atlantic City in 64 for the right to vote and for a seat in the Atlantic City Convention. Agitation in Atlantic City became legislation in 65. So even those who are protesting must have some political objective in mind, for if you cannot discern the difference, then your non-vote becomes an asset to those who didn't want you to have the right to vote in the first place. And so Republicans want to neutralize the protest vote. They want to neutralize the energy of activists, because activists make the difference in close elections. 1960, we protested and we got the desired results, Kennedy. In 68, we exploded the convention. We lost our discipline. Dr. King had been killed. Robert Kennedy had been killed. We end up with undesired consequences. Nixon became president by the margin of our inability to make a decision. I say, when you look at the Gore, Lieberman, John Conyers, Daschle, Maxine Waters, labor side of history. You look at the Bush, Cheney, Strom Thurmond, Jesse Hams, Tom DeLay. There are two teams, and we must have the capacity to be discernful and to, in fact, struggle.
A major focus of the concern of those who came out to speak out against the drug war here at the Shadow Conventions on Tuesday was the racist implementation of U.S. drug policy. It's interesting, just as a point of information, to share with you a term I heard on an AM talk radio show referring to helicopters, and apparently a term that is used quite often here. Helicopters that are flying over the city, of course predominantly police helicopters, are referred to as ghetto birds. Reporting from the streets of Los Angeles, California, at the Shadow Conventions and the Democratic National Presidential Convention, for the Western Slopes News Service, I'm Mike Thornton.